Later, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were sitting at the table, and he upbraided them for their lack of faith and stubbornness because they had not believed those who saw him after he had risen. And he said to them, "Go into all the world and proclaim the good news to the whole creation. The one who believes and is baptized will be saved, but the one who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. By using my name, they will cast out demons. They will pick up snakes in their hands, and if they drink any deadly thing, it will not hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover." The word of God. Please be seated. There are two kinds of phone callers in the world. There are those who get right to the point, and then there's those who like to linger on the phone. Which one are you? Turn to the person next to you and share. Are you a lingerer, or are you a get to the point kind of a person on the phone? So, my wife and the entirety of what I believe of her family are lingerers on the phone. And if you're the kind of person who's a get to the point kind of a phone call person, listening to lingerers on the phone is like torture. And every so often, she gives me the opportunity, usually while we're driving and I can't get out of the car, to listen to her lingering family conversations. And I begin to get into backseat driver listener mode, where I'm starting to coach her. "No, you're explaining, that's too long. Shorten the explanation, shorten it. Just give them an answer, don't explain, just say yes or no. And on and on they'll talk. And then they'll do this thing where they'll just randomly stop talking. Have you been around these kind of lingering phone callers where they're both still on the phone, but no one is saying a thing? And usually they'll do that at the end where they're done having their conversation and they'll just, and I'm like, this is horribly awkward. Hang the phone up. My family, we love conversations in person, but we are a get to the point kind of phone caller type family. And my brother is the master of it. He's the master. If the pause is too long in the conversation, it's most likely because he's already hung up on you. And often I have to call back, "Hey, did we get lost?" He's like, "No, I was done." And then again, hangs up on you. Super abrupt. Just stops, just finishes. Mark is this kind of gospel. It is abrupt. It's a fast gospel to begin with, but even the end of this gospel, it just comes to an end abruptly. It just stops. No resolutions, no clear answers, no lingering. It just stops. Last Sunday, we visited this passage, the end of Mark, and we reflected on this idea where the women were told to go talk to Peter and the disciples and tell them that Jesus has already gone ahead to Galilee. Then he says, "There you'll see him just as he told you." So here's what the women did. They came out, ran away from the tomb, trembling and awestruck, and said nothing to anyone out of fear, full stop. That's the end of Mark. Abrupt. No resolve, no lingering, no easy answers, just full stop. For people who like to have resolve and like to ease into an answer, Mark doesn't give us that satisfaction. Mark seems to make us dwell on the fact that we were here and now we're done with this and you have to figure it out. In the book of Mark, in this gospel, Jesus' book ends, the beginning and the end. And in the bookends that Mark uses, Jesus is associated to Galilee. So at the very end here, we see that Jesus is going ahead to Galilee. And at the beginning, we'll notice that when Jesus is introduced right after John the Baptist, he's introduced as one who comes from Galilee. So Mark seems to invite us to go back, to find Jesus, to go back and insert ourselves into the following, to follow along and see the rhythm of being invited to go back to Galilee. Go back to the beginning and move through the story again together until we are all able to see clearer. And if you don't see clearer, go back to Galilee and work your way through it again together collectively. Insert yourself. Watch Jesus as Jesus moves, as Jesus feeds, as Jesus heals, as Jesus protects, as Jesus cares. Be there in that moment when Jesus touches the leper. Do you get inserted as the leper, the one who needs healing, the one who's going through broken things in your household? Are you the one who stands by Jesus while others run away? Go back to Galilee and start again and start again and start again until things become more clear. But the question is, if we go back and we go back and we find ourselves in an empty grave, what is next? As we go back in this story and we follow Jesus and all that Jesus does, as we're led to the grave over and over again and again, what is next? If we pick back up in chapter 16 and we read on, surprisingly, we don't find the end of the book after verse 8. Even though that is the end of the gospel, it seems to carry on. Most versions will have a few more verses that follow, verse 8. And this is not an alternate ending, right? This is not about having the alternate universe of endings. I want us to be clear about that because there are some people who read their Bibles and some versions may have or may not have this ending. And they say, well, my Bible is more holy than your Bible because of my ending. This is not an alternate ending. When we get to this chapter 16, verse 9 of Mark, we see that most versions have an asterisk or some kind of indicator that, that from this point forward, these are not found in the early manuscripts. So you might see it like this in the book of the New International Version. When you get to write about that point, you'll see this right in the Bible. The earliest manuscripts and some other ancient witnesses do not have verse 9 through 20. Maybe it's the CSB. If you like the CSB version, it looks more like this. Some of the earliest MSS conclude with 16 verse 8. Or ESV, English Standard Version. That's also a very popular one, right? They indicate to you. Even the NRSV has a way of emboldening where you're at, the long ending of Mark. So in the NRSV, there's a short ending, and then there's a long ending, or the extended version, to help you know that this portion is a different portion, that Mark ended in 8, but there's still a story to be told, and it had to be told, and so it will be told. And if you're wondering, well, I read the King James Version, and it's not in the King James Version. We get the whole full gambit of verses. That means I've got more verses, my Bible's better. This is not an alternate ending. The King James Version was written in the 1500s using later medieval manuscripts. And these earlier manuscripts were founded and discovered and studied in the 1600s. So what we have before us is different codex or manuscripts that were used. And because the earliest manuscripts were found later, it was a part of the newer translations, whereas King James Version was translated before we found these different codexes, this Codex Sinaiticus and Codex Vaticanus. So, if these were not alternate endings, because an alternate ending means they all have the same date of ending, just different endings, and we're not arguing or debating the more sincere version versus the less sincere, then what are we talking about? We're talking about something that is an addition to the original ending, and it shows up in later in these manuscripts. This this is what we see in the community. The community is here, and they kept going back to Galilee. The earliest manuscripts tells us it ends at 8. The women leave. They're nervous. They don't tell anyone. And Jesus is already at Galilee. So this community, this post-resurrection community, goes back to the beginning of the story again, and they read through it. And then they go back again, and they read through it so that they understand what is happening in the Markan story. And then, the community says, wait, we must not just stop at the grave. We have gone through the story with Jesus, and there is new lighting. There's an understanding. They've heard from other communities, and they've recognized that there's a resurrection of Jesus, and Jesus is moving, and Jesus was working with disciples. And so the community here is beginning to get excited about the work that has been done and is being done in their community. It is what I would like to call the post-credit stinger. Has anyone heard of post-credit stinger? Now, they didn't create this, but Marvel has really made this famous. If you are a Marvel fan and you go watch a Marvel movie, you will see other people who are just mere casual Marvel watchers. At the end of the movie, what will those people do? They leave because they don't know life. They leave because they have no idea the depth of what's going to happen. So you sit through it, and about halfway through the credits, they might show you something, but you wait. How far do you wait? You've gotta look at all 7 million names come up on that screen. You've listened to every piece that has been played and every symphony that has recorded it, and you've seen every name possible in every combination possible. And you have to wait until almost the lights come back up. And right in there, the reward you get for waiting 12 hours is like a minute and a half clip. Could be longer. And sometimes the clip is just funny, or sometimes it's whimsical, but especially in the first ones, you'll notice that it's a telling of a story that is current, implicated on the experience you just had. You're watching something that's about to take place, or that is taking place, because of the whole experience you just had in that Marvel storyline. This is Mark's little stinger. This is the community saying, hey, Mark's credits have rolled. The women are in fear. They go away silent. They don't tell anyone. But wait, says the Markan community. I've got a stinger for you. Something special is happening. Yes, life is still unpredictable. Yes, Rome is still in power. Yes, we still don't know between what we think and what is going to happen, but Jesus is alive. They give their stinger, their portion of the story. All things are not quite clear yet. We don't quite get it all, says this post-resurrection community. It looks like it's ended here. However, Jesus is alive. And we will not allow fear to keep us from moving forward into a life of resurrection. Just because they weren't certain of where things were going to land did not stop them from living out a life of resurrection. They decided that things had gotten too disorienting, but they would not stop. And so Jesus shows up to these disciples, and it says that he unbraided them, or really he called them out. He called them out because they were, not because they were afraid, but because they were stubborn. Because they were done. They were so stubborn, they were done. And because they were done, they just were completely disoriented with the situation. these disciples in chapter 16, in verse 14 and 15 and 16, as Jesus meets them, are completely paralyzed. Have you ever been between a concrete truth you once believed and something new that you have not quite fully grasped? That's a frightening place to be. It's paralyzing, right? You're no longer this, but you're not quite there, and this is a frightening place to be. These disciples, the paradigm has shifted. Jesus has died. They haven't quite grasped the full resurrection, and they're here, and they're just done. They're stubborn about it. We don't want to move forward. Sometimes when our fears are so great, we become stubborn about our paralysis. May I say that this post-resurrection community said, while we are scared and unsure and disoriented, we move forward anyways. Faith and a hope that pushes us beyond where we were to where we're going, with the trust that God never leaves our side. To a person that you say, keep moving. Tell somebody else, keep going. You see, I know many of us come into the space just like I do, and we're constantly wrestling with life. And maybe there was a place we were, we're not quite there anymore, and there's a place we're headed. We don't know what that promised land is quite yet, and so we're stuck in this place, and it feels like paralysis. Do I make any moves? Should I make any change? Should I go for it? The post-resurrection community says, yes, go for it. Go for it. When we travel places in cars, I don't use map apps. Now, you may judge me for that, but I won't do it. I don't use Waze. I don't use Apple Maps. I don't use Google Maps. And I definitely don't turn to audio for them, because it's like they're bossing me around. And I hate that. Don't boss me around. I got a mom already. Don't tell me where to drive. I won't make that left. Google tells me left. I will go right. My pastors who roll with me know this so well. When I'm driving and they're like, hey, do you want us to put this? Nope. I'm going to feel this out. And I feel like going that way. I've always been like this. Let me tell you how, this is the lore for this. This is how this all began, right? Back in the early 2000s, there was this thing between handheld maps and like map apps that tell you where to go. There was this thing right in between those, between the TomTom, between the Atlas, and Google Maps. Does anybody remember what that thing was? MapQuest. You see the disdain that was in their voice when they said MapQuest? In those early 2000s, I was working at La Sierra University. I was a recruiter, and we had to get MapQuest. Here's the thing, MapQuest kind of is like map apps, but it doesn't actually tell you. So like when it says in 0.1 miles, you have to know that math. What does 0.1 miles look like when you're driving? And then it'll say slight left, and when you get there, there's like 7 different lefts you can take, and none of them are right. And what MapQuest would like to do to human beings is it would often put together some directions and a map for you just to lead you nowhere where you need to go. Nowhere. As a recruiter, I would have my office pull up all the maps. Now, here's the thing about MapQuest. It didn't travel with you, because back then, believe this or not, young people, internet did not go with you. Yeah, so we had to pull up our maps and then print them and then take them along with us and pray to dear Lord that these maps are the right directions, because cell phones were barely working and I had the middle of the country. So when I would travel to recruit, it would be in the South or it'd be in Montana where there's nothing. Now, all the recruiters, we traveled together, all the recruiters from the different universities, we recruited together. And one day, we were in the South, and I had my MapQuest with me, and we were all having a quick brunch. Then we're about to break out, and every recruiter to their own cars, and they take off. Some of us rode together. I had a car full of recruiters that love to ride along. And as I got up to go, one of the young recruiters, she says, "Hey, this is my territory. I know exactly where the school is. Follow me. It's tricky." And I said, "No, I have MapQuest." She said, "You're going to want to follow me." I said, "No, I'm not. I've got MapQuest." She says, "Okay." And you know, three cars followed me because I was so convincing that I knew MapQuest had it right. We come out the plaza. She makes a left. I make a right. She disappears into the distance, but MapQuest was going to lead me to the school. After my 15th left, I said, "I don't know if MapQuest knows what's up," but I kept following it. And finally, after the final turn to turn into the school, I make the left, and everyone's behind me, and there before us was nothing. When I mean nothing, I mean nothing. There were no buildings. There was no city. There was nothing. It was like we had pulled up to the end of the earth. There was nothing there. And I thought to myself, MapQuest couldn't be wrong. MapQuest, you couldn't be wrong. The school must have got eaten up by the earth. And then something in my head said, maybe what you had put all of your trust and faith in and reality when they meet might not be where you need to be. And maybe there's a different paradigm you need to shift to. And I had to make a decision at that point to tell all the recruiters, "Hey, the school got eaten by the earth." Or say, "Hey, there is a different way to get to that destination." Sometimes in the midst of what we are comfortable with to getting to where we need to go is this sense of paralysis, and we just don't know how to move forward. The post-resurrection community says, "No, indeed there is a risen imagination that tells us there is something much greater happening in the world. Come and participate with us in that movement. Come with us. Come along." Just because we're disoriented or afraid shouldn't be the reason for us to stop moving forward. The disciples, they'd lost their imagination for what a resurrected life could look like. They were engulfed in cynicism and skepticism. They were engulfed in their own pain and their own loss. They were engulfed in their fears, and they weren't able to see the resurrection imagination of a new world before them. We don't have to be free from fear or doubt to choose to move forward. You don't have to have all the answers tied up in a perfect bow before you move forward. We don't have to be chipper or always happy to be faithful. That's easy for those of us who are always chipper and happy. Some of us wake up and it's like, "Why do birds suddenly appear?" Some of us wake up and it's like. Neither is wrong to be faithful to a resurrection imagination. We just have to use our full resurrected imagination to lead us forward into living full lives. Lives that are more hopeful, that are more present, that are more willing. The good news, according to Mark, is for all creation. All creation gets this when we live fully into that resurrected imagination. Our hopeful ways, our present ways, our willing lives should speak goodness into all of creation, into the land, into the sky, into the environment, into the animals around us, into the neighbors, into all of the world. You see, it is a restorative way of living to all things. And it is in contrast with systems of dehumanizing. It is in contrast with bodies that are suffering. It is in contrast to communities that are silenced. It is in contrast to a creation that is groaning for more. The postmark community wasn't just casting out demons. They were proclaiming freedom from systems and powers that were abusive and controlling. They weren't just speaking in new tongues. They were discovering new ways of speaking across divisions. They weren't just surviving poison. They were gifted with a resilience that they will make it even in toxic environments. It is the fresh imagination of resurrection. So what about us today? What about us? What is our 92505 version of a post-credit stinger to Mark's gospel? What does that look like for us here? What must fear not paralyze in us and silence our imagination of resurrection? What can our community add to the end of Mark's telling that will continue to be good news to the whole of creation? Could it look like mending relationships? Could it look like a deep and profound care for the disenfranchised and the marginalized? Could it look like a large, diverse table where all are welcome to eat and be in the presence of Jesus? Could it look like celebrating new birth, dedicating her and her family back to Christ, or holding loved ones as they slowly slip away into the questions of death? Does it look like standing up for families who've lost their voice in their presence? What does it look like for us to live with good news for all creation? Well, I'm not exactly sure. And I'm not exactly sure what the scope of that looks like. But I know a great place to start. We can start by going back to meet Jesus at Galilee.